The following is a presentation of Morning Drive Media.
Broadcasting from beautiful Burbank, California, in the shadow of a sizzler, this is the Knapsack Files. I'm Ken Knapsack for, a very special edition. This is going to be a very LA interview in the sense that, well, I'm catching up with this gentleman on a podcast, but that's what we do here in Los Angeles. Before I do that, though, I do always like to tell you guys that today's episode of the Knapsack Files is brought to you in part by Skillshare. What's Skillshare? It's an online learning community, thousands of classes in design, business, technology, and more. I use Skillshare. I really, really do. And because of that, Skillshare is giving you a two-month free trial. Just sign up by using the promo code TheKnapsackFiles2MO. TheKnapsackFiles2MO when you check out at Skillshare.com. Try it. Your brain will thank you. Business out of the way. Let's introduce my guest. If you've watched TV, you've probably seen this man perform in many a commercial. We're going to talk about that, but so much more. He is Iowa's own Andrew Hotcher.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm pretty good. Not bad.
This is fun for me.
Yeah.
Because I have known you since the early aughts.
Yes.
The early 2000s when we did some of them Groundlings make-em-ups and skits together.
That's right. And I know how long because it happened when I conceived my daughter. Or just before.
Just before.
Like, yeah. And not in the class.
Yeah, no.
It wasn't part of a sketch.
It was like a Monty Python life of, or a meaning of life right. sex ed class scene. No. But it was a sketch. You announced it via sketch.
I did. With our friend Amy. And it didn't go over well. people thought it was going to be expected funny, and it wasn't.
Well, I mean,
because it was just a ridiculous way of announcing the class that I was going to have a baby.
Telling the friend. So that was 17 years ago. So you
16.
Had
16. Well, my daughter, Charlotte's 15.
Okay, so that'd be right, yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
Just over 15.
So, 2002. Yeah. Wow. That's how long we go back. You, sir, are a very successful actor. You are known. This is an audio only show, but you are a commercial regular.
I've done a few.
You've done a ton of other stuff, but that's definitely where some of your bread's been buttered.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cannot deny that. That is for sure.
And you're a father. You're a husband. You're so much more. When did you come to LA?
I moved here April 95.
Oh, man.
So yeah.
I just crossed my 20-year. You've been here a little longer. A little longer.
23.
A little longer. From Iowa.
Actually, I lived in Phoenix before that for about 3 years.
Oh.
Doing some theater, doing some improv, and then,
love me some Arizona.
Heard the calling and moved here in 95.
So, but born and raised in Iowa.
Yes.
What's that like? My dad was raised in Iowa, Fort Dodge, but...
Right. I was born in and grew up in Iowa City, Iowa, which is the University of Iowa. That's its home base. So it's a college town. So it's not like any other part of Iowa, except for maybe Ames, Iowa, which is Iowa State, which we just beat in football, which that makes me very happy.
You're very proud.
Yeah. So it's a little bit of culture in a cornfield, as they call it there.
Yeah, my dad was just in a cornfield. Born in Austria, a Russian descent, raised in a cornfield, yeah. So does that make sense that you would find the performing bug early?
I did in high school, but I initially thought it would be a really dumb pursuit to be an actor, which it is.
It is.
And because somebody had, I was at a thespian conference once and somebody said, did you know that 90% of all actors are out of work 100% of the time? I was like, no, that sounds terrible. I'll never do that.
I'll never do that.
It's ridiculous.
Just say no.
The odds are against me.
To drugs and acting.
Yeah. But then eventually moving to Phoenix, went, I really enjoyed doing theater in high school, did theater, met a commercial acting teacher really didn't teach me a whole lot about really what you need to do in commercials. But, through her, I met a director who directed an improv troupe in Scottsdale's and joined that group and started doing, a lot of improv comedy, performing on the weekends, doing more theater. Yeah. And that's how it really kind of blossomed. And
And then you're like, screw it. We're doing this. We're doing
well,
this.
Actually, some girl that I was dating went, you're moving to L.A. And it made me admit that I was moving to L.A. at some point and just went, you're right, I am. And I set a date 2 months later and moved.
So she forced you / convinced you what was already in your soul? Or she uncovered part of your journal?
I think she realized that, because she would come to the improv shows and probably saw that, you know, Phoenix wasn't my landing zone.
Right, right.
So she just kind of like, she just kind of nudged me out the door.
Give you the...
You know, and I went, made me admit it. Admit what I knew I had to do. And it was kind of, it was the right time for me to go. And so I did.
You say you had to do it. What is that? That is something that we all kind of feel. This like pull, despite warnings.
Yeah.
Despite that.
Despite the statistics.
Yeah.
I had to give it a go and moved here and didn't do jack squat for the first year.
Hollywood.
Just survive. Just working crap jobs. Taking bartending classes, being a security guard.
That's right.
Boom.
We talked about that.
Yeah.
You used to guard a parking lot or something, right?
I did a parking lot in Culver City.
Oh, that's great.
I think that was my first gig as a security guard after their intensive training.
2 weeks if you're lucky.
Yeah.
A couple weekends. Yeah.
Learn how to be an Andy Griffith type unarmed security guard
in Culver City
across from Sony Studios.
Oh, yeah, right there. Did you take that job thinking someone from Sony's going to walk over and discover me?
I was just assigned that place.
Yeah,
and
got that post.
Yeah. And
did you have any specific goals? Because when you hit that town, I mean, acting. Where do I go to be an actor? The old Heather Graham joke from... Bowfinger, but
well, I had I had Groundlings on my mind when I first moved here and took level one, and my level one teacher was really hard on me. I was doing I had done like game improv in Phoenix, and I think I had a lot of bad habits, even though I was funny.
Yeah.
It still wasn't quite the Groundling method, and and I think the teacher was a bit disgruntled. He was not a kind teacher across the board. But so I took a hiatus after that.
You just like, did you get passed or you just...
I got the, I'm on the fence. You can move forward, but I think you should repeat. And, which was a huge, knife to my ego.
Yeah.
Thinking that I was, hot shit. And, I'll admit it. My ego was a little bruised, and I was like, "Man, if this is what I have to expect out of teachers, I was like, I should step back and really make sure that I'm ready before I continue." Took another improv class at a class that was on CBS Radford.
Oh, on the lot.
On the lot. So that was like, ooh, it's on the lot.
Ooh, I could get past the studio guards.
Yeah, that was it.
No,
it was a terrible improv class.
How do they offer that?
I think the guy who taught it had connections somehow.
Oh, he's...
he was definitely well connected.
I want to teach improv.
Yeah, I think he did a radio show or something like that.
Interesting.
But like he taught this improv class that it wasn't... he was not very good at it.
Yeah. There is such thing as really, really bad improv.
Right.
Yeah.
So
you learned though something I learned too in the early on in the Groundlings. We're both funny. We come from smaller areas, so you're naturally the bigger fish in small pond. And then suddenly you get in front of a professional, disgruntled or not, and they're going to tell you, you're funny, but you're not doing it right. You're not good. You got to learn. You got to hone the craft. And it sucks. I drove home in tears one day, like early on. And it was Karen, our beloved Karen.
Yes, our beloved Karen.
Who's a controversial Groundlings director to some, but we loved her to death. We'd have her later on in advance. But yeah, I remember I got great laughs in a scene one day and everyone clapped. And then she wasn't clapping. She was substitute teaching for Tim Bagley that one day. And she's just like, nope. What do you mean? I'm hilarious. Sure, you are. That's not the point of this.
Yes.
So you learned that lesson then too.
You didn't play with a ware. You didn't you didn't come with any high stakes.
Raise those stakes. Add information. Add information. Yeah. It is kind of, but that's kind of the dividing line if you're going to be serious about this stuff.
Sure. Well, you know what? It was funny you bring that up, and I I was just talking to a friend of mine who went to Stanford, you know, and he was valedictorian at his high school, goes to Stanford, and then he goes, oh my God, I'm in the lower 20% at Stanford.
Yeah.
Everybody is super smart.
I had the super tassels when I walked the stage in high school. Yeah.
Yeah.
You got to learn. You got to learn. You got to hit the big city. When did you, we're definitely going to dive in a little bit of our Groundlings history. I reference it so much here in the Knapsack Files that people know, but you were there. You were there there at the final levels. That, at what point, I don't ever want to label you as a commercial actor. That's part of your thing. You're an actor.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. You're a thespian by trade, sir, but you've done stand-up comedy, all that stuff.
A little bit.
Well, but
mostly
when
improv.
When I met you, though, you were doing some funny stand-up stuff.
Yeah,
you're doing.
I didn't do it for very long.
No, you didn't.
And then with the kid, it just, you know, the whole grind of going out all the time, and having a baby was a little too much.
A little too much. Well, as it should be. I think it should be at that point.
And I had to pick the easier route of just showing up and doing improv.
Yeah. Yeah, it's unplanned. It's better. It's like me and the podcast. Yeah. People are like, what do we do? You heard. You asked. What do we do? I don't know. We'll figure out when we get there. We're going to figure it out. However, commercials, definitely, like I said, no joke, you're so good at it. You have a very recognizable face, and then you grow your beard to sometimes not be as recognizable, which is, I love those faces. I'll be flipping the channels. So I'm like, Hotry's got his beard on.
Yeah.
He's doing that. You're here with a beard now.
It usually means there's a slow period. to give me the time to grow it.
Yeah.
So I'll tell you how slow it is right now.
Yeah.
I've grown a beard twice this year.
Twice in one
year. And let me tell you, it takes about 5 to 6 months to grow the beard because I'm not thick.
Yeah.
It is a very thin, patchy.
Patchy. Yeah. It's
a near beard.
A near beard.
A weird beard. You know?
Yes.
It's been called many things.
When was the first big campaign or spot you had? What was the first one?
The first one was in 97.
Yeah.
I did a stamp commercials. I did like four for the U.S. Postal Service when they had these special edition stamps. And so I did one for Bugs Bunny stamp, Humphrey Bogart. Back when they were filming commercials with Panavision cameras.
Oh, yeah.
And we were rolling out, you know,
full on
film.
Yeah.
Like it was.
Print those dailies.
Yeah.
Cut them later.
It was so. So I did a couple of those spots, and we did four of them total.
Mm-hmm.
And then, initially in that campaign, they were trying to get Christopher Lloyd, but Christopher Lloyd wanted to do, I guess, some big kind of Uncle Sam type character. And they were like, no, I don't think so. And then they opened it up to casting, and I remember going to the callback, and they had like three callbacks for that job. And then I went to the third one. And I get there, and no one's in the waiting room, and I can hear all this laughter inside, and then out comes French Stewart.
Good old French Stewart.
Yeah.
Was he French Stewart at this point?
He was French Stewart, you know, doing...
NBC sitcom star.
Third Rock from the Sun was
a
big show then. Yeah. And I was like, oh, crap.
There's no way.
There's no way. And then I punched myself in the face, you know, figuratively, and said, nope, get in there and...
Yeah,
you know, just do your thing
and do your thing, and you did your thing,
and I did my thing, and they probably went, "Hey, he's a lot cheaper,
and
we like him. Let's hire him."
But that's how it works, and how it's begin. Because there was another one, I remember that, but I remember when I finally didn't meet you till was it 2002? Yeah, 2002, the final advanced class, and it's been, trust me,
and
I remember. Just like, oh, that guy. Yeah, I was trying to remember the big spot. It was before I moved to LA. And we had talked about it one time. It wasn't necessarily the stand. There was something else around that time. So I moved here in 99. There was something. I remember you're like, oh, yeah, I did that one thing. And I was like, and I was blown away. I knew Andrew Hotry. And next, I'm pretty sure I'm going to know Steve Martin. Like, it was just like, I can't believe that guy. I know that guy. And I'm trying to remember which one it was. You've been in so many, though.
Yeah. I don't know. I can't. The stamp one always comes out because that was the first kind of campaign.
Right.
And then, 2002, we had the strike for a little bit.
Yeah.
In 2000, gosh, I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe Bud Light.
That might have been.
With the French maid. maybe. I don't know.
Yes. Yes, that's the one.
That it? Yeah.
That's the one. You were dressed in a French maid's costume.
Yeah.
That's the one.
I was nearly voted sexiest man alive that year.
Nearly.
Nearly.
Mark
just
Harmon
missed out.
And you.
Yep.
Yeah, that's the one. That's what I remember. Like, oh, yeah, you're the guy. You show up at the door, or no, you're the answer to the door.
Yeah, the girlfriend calls up and goes, hey, why don't we play, someone tonight is going to be wearing a French maid outfit and carrying a six pack of Bud Light. Oh, me likey.
Yeah. That.
It was me likey something.
Yes.
And then I show up at the door, and she's in a French maid outfit, so am I. And then she slams the door on me.
Commercial love.
Yeah.
How do you deal with that grind? How do you deal with going into an audition? French Stewart's there. Christopher Lloyd's like, eh. And it's you. And you say you punch yourself in the face. But that's something you've had to deal with time and time again. You can never rest on your laurels.
No, but I mean, after a while, it just, like, I got to the point where no one commercial audition, you know, freaked me out. Like, it was never a big thing. Of course, there was ones that I wanted that I didn't get, but I always felt, there'll be another opportunity, another job down the line. So, I was lucky enough to get to the point where I didn't have to, that I never felt overwhelmed by one commercial audition. On the other hand, theatrical auditions for television or film, I freak out and, can't control my emotions and, panic, and it's almost always a disaster.
What's the dividing line? Just in your head?
It's because I want it.
Because you want it.
It's because I want it. I want every theatrical job.
Sure.
Because I do, they've always been, 20 to 1.
Yeah, yeah.
Or more, 20, 30 commercial auditions to one theatrical. Right. And so I've always, and that's the path. That's where I
want
to go.
That's where you
want
to.
That's where I want. I mean, I've had,
oh, yeah,
little bits here and there.
Yeah.
The new season of Always Sunny in Philadelphia.
I
have a brief appearance coming up.
Nice.
And I think the fourth episode.
That's
all I can say.
That's all you can say.
That's all I can say. I signed one of those forms.
One of those things.
That I cannot say anything more.
It's like you're in a Star Wars. I totally get it. That's why I want to address your success, but I know. You could unfortunately be, there could be a stigma around that kind of stuff. Just like in the old days of a television actor couldn't be considered a film actor.
Right.
Until, Alec Baldwin decided, I'll come do TV, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah.
So I understand that. It's an unfortunate.
There is no more stigma there because all the celebrities are doing ads now. They used to only do them in Japan.
Yes.
Brad
Pitt selling whiskey in Tokyo.
But not so much anymore. Now, he could sell them here now if he wanted.
And that's got to, I'm sure, add to some of the anxiety going to some of these auditions, maybe. You're like, who's on the other side of the room now?
It's more voiceover.
Oh, yeah, one. Yeah, you work your ass off, do a scratch track, and then suddenly they're like, we're bringing in so-and-so.
Which no one ever goes, you know who that is doing the Chrysler ads? No one knows. No one cares.
Yeah, my friend Roger, he's the voice of Sonic the Hedgehog for years, and that movie's, they've cast the voice. He never had any. He's like, I know the only thing I hope I can get is a scratch track. I know they're going to bring in some celebrity, which they did, and that's just the nature of the game.
True.
Comedy though has always been one of your focal points because you are damn funny. My mom, who's probably listening, still to this day, will say, how's that Andrew with the Chinex sketch? That's still her favorite sketch of all time.
Oh my God. I made a video, like a little clip of Chinex.
Yeah.
For, I had one of those like, can you put together a sketch comedy audition for an unnamed NBC, sketch show.
That's on at late night.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe or maybe not be on Saturdays. I don't know. Yeah. And so I had to put something together. And so I did a kind of a Chinek thing. So it's out there on YouTube. But it's more of a Chinek support group.
So it's like you're continuing the story.
Yes. It's, calling, I can't. It, So you just have to look it up.
Yeah. And
you
know, this sketch is best as I can describe without just remixing a sketch badly is you and Brian Keith Etheridge, the very talented writer and producer.
A fellow
Chinekian, which means Chinekian described as, you know, a little bit, your jawline's not as, how would you describe it?
It lacks definition. So it's more of a, your chin and neck blend together into one fluid form.
Which my mother feels as though she's in that category. So when you, Brian, did that sketch, and it's a father and son.
It's a father, son, and the son just is asking a girl to the prom. She turns him down because he's a Chinook. He doesn't know what a Chinook is and calls his father in, and it's the day his father feared the most was to explain that we're Chinooks.
We're Chinooks, son.
It's something you got to live with. And I didn't believe him. And then he said, here, try to put this pillowcase on. And I couldn't hold the pillow under my chin because of my lack of one.
Yeah. And yes, and that one spoke to my mother, spoke to a lot of people. It was hilarious.
Yeah.
Comedy, sketch comedy, that's definitely where your heart's at, man, right? Yeah.
Well, in the little video clip I also couldn't put a bicycle helmet on because it doesn't have a Chinook strap, and couldn't play the violin.
Because
it can't hold violin. Hold it.
You're just going to fall. The violin's going to fall.
So it's just a series of frustration.
Yeah. I'm trying to think. The sketch we got into the show, we got one in the Paperboy.
Paperboy.
Yeah.
Marriage therapist Paperboy.
Yeah, and unfortunately, my acting skills showed when I'm trying to portray a 12-year-old Paperboy. but that one was a lot of fun. We got to work with Kristen on that one.
Yes.
And I still have those CD-ROMs somewhere, probably, or DVDs.
I know you had, you have them digital.
Do I? Oh, yeah. Yes, I do have some of them. Oh,
you had something because we had to.
Yes.
Kristen one time asked for a sketch that we had done, and you were like, you had it so that we could put it up so she could maybe use it for SNL when she was in her later seasons there and like going, what have I written before? Probably needed something. And then it.
Yes, that was actually the last time I spoke with her. She called me from, quote, you know, and we're talking and she's like, yeah, I got to go to work. And I was just like, I was at work at the mall. I was like, yeah, your work's a little different than mine. Yeah. Go to work. Yeah. You might be late for your shift down at 30 Rock.
Yeah.
That was a great sketch too. That year was such a 2002 working with you guys, working the whole crew. We had a great class, man. That was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
It
was a blast. It was a good crew.
It was.
It's amazing. You know, Brian Keith, who's done amazing stuff.
Yeah.
Kristen, of course. Nicole Johnson.
Yeah, Matt TV. Yeah. Role Models. She's the mother and role models of Sean William Scott's little. Mikey Day. I was talking about Mikey Day with Mark and Draco on a show recently here, a friend of his during that time period. Yeah. And just being exposed to the controlled chaos that is Mikey Day on a sketch stage.
We were both repeated on that. We were the last advanced class to have repeats. Because the bottleneck into going in advance was so thick and long. You know, people were waiting a year or two to be able to do it. They were like, we can't do repeats in advance anymore. And so we were the last. So Mikey was a repeat. Mm. I was a repeat. Brian Keith Etheridge was a repeat.
Right.
And
was Witchery a repeat?
There was one other one. I think it was Amy. Yeah.
Yeah.
She repeated.
I think that seems right. And I remember Kristen and Nicole went on to Sunday at that time there.
Yeah.
It's such an intense, I talk and my listeners know, you know, that's something, it's very important in my life, very fun, well in my past, but it's like high school. It's this intense, intense thing to be. We talk about being, you know, I used to write a funny little sketch back in high school or my early college days and everything. Then you come out here and it's like, oh, this is the big time.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, it's like an intense like work study.
Yeah,
like you got to be ready to go and perform. And you know, a lot of times it's you know, what I learned in that program is timing, your timing of when you're going through, like, you know, how many spots are open in Sunday company. Sometimes the vote depends on that, you know, and then while you're there, what's the situation, you know, with, you know, how you jive with the cast and the director and the size, you know, the size. When I was in Sunday company, the size was huge. And so there was, you know, a massive cut after my first 6 months. And And there was a lot. And I probably would have benefited from taking a 6 months off, you know, especially with a young baby at home. I, you know, I was the only dad, young dad
at the time
doing it. Yeah.
Yeah.
It was pretty crazy. And trying to juggle that, you know, taking care of my daughter when my wife has things to go and be. And sometimes, like, you know, I had to bring my daughter to just, the theater just before transition time, you know, to like hand her off. Like, it. And I bought a house.
Yeah.
During my second advanced class, I was buying a house.
That's right.
Had a daughter. So I had to work on my house while I was taking the first 6 weeks of advanced. It was crazy.
It was crazy.
It was insane.
I think that was the same because I would come watch your advanced. I think I watched one of your advanced shows, right?
Yeah.
Did you have, you had the class with Peter Falk's wife, the late great Peter Falk's wife?
Yes.
Yes. And I, that's where I had, I sat next to Columbo where I hit oysters. At that bar, the Italian restaurant across the street.
I
told him about my depression, and he just looked at me and goes, you're going to be all right, kid.
It was, I know, you're going to be fine. No, look at me in my eye. I'll tell you it's great.
He was great. Intense time. You get through it, though. How is it now raising a family out here? But you get two kids now.
Yeah. Huh? Yeah. I got daughter is 15, son is 12.
Yeah.
So he just started middle school. She's started sophomore year of high school.
I haven't seen you in person in a couple of years.
Yeah.
And you still look the same to me. How are you holding up?
Well, it's the little hair dye, you know, helps. I think that's probably it. I'm covering up a little bit of age. I'm not going to lie.
You know, I let the gray. I don't have enough hair left to dye, I don't think. And how did a child early on, when you're going through the Sunday company second time, advanced class, going to Sunday company, and
this is early on, LA style early on, because I was 31 when I had my daughter.
Were you 31 then?
Pretty sure.
You seem so old and wise to me back then.
No, I was 32, I guess. 32 when she was born.
Right.
But yes, that's young.
Young to us.
Yes.
I got friends at 50 having their first kid. So.
I know. It's crazy. But,
did you feel any pressure? Was it like, I got to catch up to back home? What? Did you have that pressure?
No, just my wife and I were just kind of like, we didn't want to be old parents. Right. You know, I think that was pretty much it. We got married and just over a year later, we had Charlotte. It wasn't that long. I think we just kind of felt that was right.
Yeah. And it is.
It's had its challenges, but it's been great. Yeah. And, you know, now she's amazing.
Does she follow in dad's footsteps? You know, your wife's also a great performer as well, too. We should point out, too. Does she follow in that footsteps?
She's done a little acting.
Do you want her to? You're like, no, stop.
Well, you know what? It's funny. She...
90% of actors are unemployed. Yes. 100% of the time.
Well, at first, when she first started asking about doing acting and wanting to do it, you know, we were kind of like, hold on. We kind of did this thing where we were like, well, let's see if she asks it again after the first time. And then she kept on asking, and we finally went, all right. And I think some of our hesitation was, if we have to drive her around to all the auditions too, that's... We're going to be doing a lot of driving. A
lot of auditions in LA. For the family, yeah.
Yeah. But we eventually said, okay. And so I think she was, I think she only had, for maybe a year, maybe a little less. But she booked two jobs.
Oh, wow.
And she was doing pretty good. And I got her an agent with the agency I'm with.
Right.
They have a kids department. And then... You know, she's in the middle of middle school, and there would be a school dance, or she wanted to go to the mall with her friends, and she would get the same day audition, and she'd be like, I don't want to go to the audition. I want to go to, you know, I want to go to the school dance.
I want to live.
I want to be a kid. And I was like, this is kind of, your agent spends a lot of time just trying to get you an audition. You know, if you agree to be an actor, you have to agree to do it when it comes available.
Yeah.
And you can't control that.
Yeah.
And so I had to say, you know, you either have to do these auditions because that's the agreement you make.
Yeah.
And if you don't, then you don't. And if you don't want to be an actor, that's fine, too.
That's fine.
You just have to pick one.
Yeah.
And stick with it. And she goes, I want to not do it right now. So
we
said, all right. Then we just called them up and said,
We're not going to continue.
We're not going to continue for now. And they just said that, you know, we understand that happens a lot at this age. And you know what? She's welcome back if she wants to come back. So that door's open.
That's a tremendously mature decision.
Yeah. And she didn't do any acting. She started high school last year. She took the drama class as an elective.
Yeah.
And has loved it. But she didn't try out for any of the school plays. But this year, she's going to try out for a school play. She's really enjoying it. She's got a great teacher. She goes to Granada Hills High School. Her teacher there is really awesome. He just took classes at the Groundlings.
No.
Yeah. He was learning from Brian Palermo there.
Yes.
And he's like, it just changed my life. And so he's starting to take some of what he's learned, and he's doing it in their class now. And so they're going to go do a field trip this month to the Groundlings to watch a Gash show.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. And I have to, and I'm going to be a chaperone.
Uh-huh. Yes. That's, how did it back to back affect your pursuit of your career? Did it affect it? Did it change it? Your life's more complete.
Yeah.
But did you feel I have to approach my career in a different way?
Not really. Not really. I mean, every time I've had my kids have provided for me in a lot of ways.
Sure.
And there was the day my daughter was born, she was born at 7:12 a.m. I had three callbacks I had a callback and four auditions that day.
Wow.
And we were literally like 2 hours after she was born
in the
recovery room. And my wife's holding our newborn baby going, well, you got to go pay for this baby. So go. And I think I had a 10:30 a.m. audition. I had an hour of sleep.
Right.
And went and did a callback. Luckily, it was with a director I'd worked before, and he gave me a part in it.
Yeah.
That, you know, wasn't one of the leads, but he gave me a part in, you know, a national commercial just to say congratulations on having a baby. Because I was in clown makeup.
Yeah.
It was like a waiting room full of clowns.
Oh, wow.
That's all I remember for Dunkin' Donuts.
I
was just, so he hired me as a clown. God bless him. And then I booked one other job out of those other auditions
that day.
So, I mean, it was like, I think my daughter brought me luck. And then when we were pregnant, like 9 months pregnant with my son, I got two big campaigns that like literally the weeks before he was born. I was working one of the jobs going, my wife is due any minute. Just so y'all know.
Just so y'all know.
You know, we might have to like really hurry up and wrap some of these things up
if
she goes into labor, because her first one was only like 5 hours.
Oh, that's, yeah.
6 hours. From start to finish, 6 hours. And I knew if something happened, it would not be long.
Small window.
Yeah.
So having children didn't affect your career negatively, or not that it would, but like it literally was a good luck charm.
Oh, yeah.
Spurned you on.
Oh.
To other things.
Hell yeah.
Yeah.
It was amazing.
And the perspective definitely switches on life, obviously, at that point, too. But I'm just fascinated with that part of it, of a lot of this pursuit in this town is naturally selfish, whether you want, you know, whether you yourself or me are a selfish person. It's a pursuit of your career, pursuit of your craft. And then other people start getting involved, and you have to worry about that, and it could change it.
Yeah. I'm lucky I have, you know, the wife that I have, and she's always been super supportive, and we've always been able to work it out. So I've never had to miss opportunities, you know. She's sacrificed a lot, you know, with her career. mm-hmm. raising the kids, you know, that hadn't been a focus for a long time.
Yeah.
You know, she's just now getting to be able to refocus on that. So I've had a good run, and, you know, hoping to keep it going.
Yeah.
You know, even on those low times, it's, you know, something comes along. I mean, I've been very fortunate, and I should never complain. I really shouldn't.
No, I mean, but I get it. I mean, your problems are your problems. But 23 years in Los Angeles is a run. Is it not, and the run's not over. But that's to dig in your heels that long. It's crazy.
Yeah,
it's crazy thing.
I can't even. It blows my mind that I've been here this long. I mean, I've lived here longer than I ever lived anywhere else.
Right.
You know, it is now, you know, I grew up in Iowa. That was 19 years.
Right.
And I'm at 23. So.
Yeah.
And it still blows my mind that my kids are LA kids.
Right.
I would be raising children that would grow up in Los Angeles. It still doesn't make sense to me.
Did you have a vision of going back home or the way? I mean, well before it happened. I mean, because when it happens. You're out here. You got to go.
I guess I just always pictured my growing up as idyllic in, you know, a college town, being able, you know, speed limits are 25 everywhere. I'm riding my bike all over town. I can get anywhere on my bike or my feet. And yes, no helmet.
No helmet. It's a Stranger Things.
And I proved many times that was a poor choice.
made a poor decision.
Yeah.
Made a bad choice. Did you at any point have the backup, another thought? You know, people are telling you don't be an actor. Did you want to, you know, be a lawyer, shoot hoops? What did you want to do? You know, did you ever have that?
No. I really had no clue what I wanted to do.
That's crazy.
I graduated high school and I wasn't doing anything. Mm-hmm. And then, like, I think in August after graduation, my dad was like, sat me down, went, "You have a choice, get a job or go to school." And I kind of went, "I guess I'll go to school." So went down and enrolled in a community college, set of courses, you know, and
I guess I'll learn.
And then, you know, I think I went for maybe a month. Mm-hmm. And then I saw in the local paper an ad for to apply for a nanny position out in New England. You know, it was a nanny placement agency. So I applied.
So wrong.
It sounds wrong.
It sounds like weird in the back of a newspaper.
Yeah. You know, it was a college town. So like, I think they were, it was the college newspaper going, hey, college ain't working out for you. Try to be a nanny in New England. And so I did, which, you know, I was a guy, so not a lot of male applicants. Yeah. So most of them, you know, would get hired in a matter of weeks, and it took a few months.
Yeah.
And then in January, had one interview and got the job and flew out there in February.
That's great.
But I wasn't taking care of little kids. I was taking care of a family that had, their eldest son had been in a car accident a previous couple of years. And had a head injury, so he was he needed extra help.
This isn't a fun sitcom at all.
No, but you know what? He was amazing. So he was back at like a school, relearning a lot of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Like he turned 21 while I was there, and so he would be at this kind of school and then come home on the weekends, and I'd take care of him. But he was super funny. He was really good at playing Wheel of Fortune on the computer.
Oh, yeah.
This is like 1990.
Uh-huh.
And
I had the Wheel of Fortune game.
Yeah. He was really good, and he would kick my ass all the time, and he would laugh his ass off at me when he would beat me. Because I would get really... super competitive, and I would get really pissed that, you know, he didn't have... You know, he struggled, you know, with memory. Motor skills, you know, he was wheelchair bound, but he could kick my fucking ass every time in this game. And he just loved it. And he had to use a touch talker.
Right.
This is one of my favorite stories of Ted. He would, you know, type in, and then a computer voice would say what he wanted to say. And I was a nanny. This agency would always hook you up with other nannies. So all my friends were nannies. I had about 10
that is
friends were girls, one other guy nanny who's still my one of my best friends today.
Right.
And I was talking on the phone with one of the girl nannies, and Ted he's typing away on his touch talker, and then I hear, "Are you talking to a girl?" I'm like, "Yeah, Dad, I am." It's like, and he goes, and he starts typing again, and I'm continuing the conversation, and then I hear, "Does she have big tits?" And I, put my hand over the phone. And I'm like, "Yeah, you know what? They're nice. They're a nice pair. Very beautiful." And then he goes, and he starts laughing and then typing in something else. I'm continuing my coach. And then I hear, "Do you think she would let me rub my face in them?" And then I was like, "Well, let me ask." And the one words that he could actually say, he would just was like, "No, no."
That's awesome.
Yeah, he's fantastic.
So it is a sitcom. Now we've got a good
now
sitcom.
Now we got a good
now
sitcom.
We got a sitcom.
But no, they have it.
They do. All right.
They
is it Minnie Driver in that?
Yeah.
One? Yes.
Yeah.
Yes,
I saw that show and I was like, oh my God.
That's the show. You should have. Oh, that's the sketch.
It's literally the show.
The show.
Damn it.
So from a nanny beginning, you take over the world here in Hollywood. Yeah. I want to go back to sketch comedy a little bit.
Okay.
I'd love to dig more into this. What do you think back in the day? What makes a good sketch to you? You were a great sketch writer. You're somewhat meticulous. I remember we would take time. I remember that Paperboy sketch. We would dig in. Some people, you go over to Brian Keith's house and he'd be nearly passed out on the couch, and you'd have a sketch in 20 minutes, and you'd dictate his his daydreams.
Back when he was depressed over being broken up with a girlfriend. That was my first meeting with him. He's like, "I just broke up with a girlfriend." He's like coming in for like a super, like, "We just, like, your name's Brian? Brian, is it?" Oh, and he's like getting like a deep, like, hug, like a bro hug. And I'm like, Brian, right?
Brian,
okay.
Yeah, we got to write a comedy sketch. Yeah, I think that's how he and I wrote that Dido sketch, was him just like just moping on his couch and just, "What if we just play Dido over and over while you sleep?" And I was like, "Okay, that works."
My God, that was right. Oh my God, that's right.
That one's on my YouTube page, I think. But what would you look at? How would you approach sketch writing back in the day and now? My style might change a little bit, but
it was just always kind of like just having that sparkle of an idea,
like a weird idea, obtuse idea, character.
Sometimes it's character, I mean, it's really depending on the base idea. The first thing that I, not that I wrote, in my second advanced class, I just remember just having the idea of a best friend coming back from the future to stop his buddy from going out with a girl that's ruining their relationship.
Right.
And so it was just that concept. It was best friend from the future,
good time traveling.
He didn't even know, or we just, mm-hmm. I had, mm-hmm. And I think the only explanation of how he did it is like, do you remember the movie Big and Zoltar and The Wish? Kind of like that. That's how it happened.
So you'd find a character
It was either based around a character or just like a situation.
Because you are a great actor, a great performer, and a great character actor. You always had just wonderful energy, and that's what I recall. I recall being so out of my element in that scene with you and Kristen. You're this bickering married couple.
Oh wow!
And I'm just sitting on this couch going, I am not keeping up with these two.
Well, if I remember, I was like, I think when we first started writing that, I think we got together, just scheduled a time. I don't think I just remember going, we have to have character. It was like really, because I think that was the second show. I think came in the second show.
It was the second show.
After we get the notes, you guys got to come up with more character stuff, play characters, not always the straight person, and which is something sometimes would do, mm-hmm. and I think that was kind of the focus. I remember going, well, we need to write yeah, you well, a bigger character.
Because
you,
my note was I wrote to internal. I wrote to the self-loathing man trying to find his way in the world.
Right.
And Karen was one of the first to tell me, I think you might be depressed. She pulled me halfway through the Groundlings. Yeah. So that you know, with 6 weeks class, it's 6 weeks show, 6 weeks show.
Yeah.
After that one, let's do the notes. She's like, I want you to write characters that win or aren't you working through your depression. I was like, what are you talking about? I'm not depressed. She's like, you got something going on. So, yes, and then you and I sit down, we got to come up with something.
She got a good nose.
She got a good nose for it.
Yeah.
And so I'm trying to play a 12.
Yeah, I remember that was just, like, I think we just kind of riffed through some ideas, and it was just like the idea of a marriage falling apart, and the paper boy saves their marriage. You know, and he's just this sage, wise young man.
A Dr. Phil of the making.
Yes, I think that was kind of... The little idea was that he was a young Dr. Phil,
and I had to try to play this 12 or 13 year old kid as best I could. You know, I'm all right, but I just remember, you're
it's with Kristen Wiig. I mean, you can't, you know, it's like, hey, I'm Mercury and Venus over here next to the sun.
Yeah.
You know, the sun gets a lot of attention. You can barely see anything else.
It was the way it was. And that was same with Mikey. I mean, we you know, you had Tim Blaney, the king of puppeteering who's just did some puppeteering work in that Melissa McCarthy movie, Happy Town Murders. And of course, it's the voice of Johnny Five in Short Circuit and the Pug and Men in Black. He's doing that. You have the dry comedy of Peter Sprite. The you know, manic everyman in Hayes Hargrove, and then you just have Mikey Day going to the moon and back with some of his characters. God. It's hard to keep up.
I was in at the first level with Mikey when he was a freshman at UCLA.
Yeah.
He was
always the youngest.
He was taking Groundlings level. No, we were in lab. I'm sorry, not level one. It was lab.
So that's
writing
level
lab.
Level three at the time.
Yeah. So he's doing writing lab and taking a full slate of classes at UCLA, and he wrote a play and directed it and starred in it while he was doing lab. Absolutely like another level like productivity that I could. I remember going, I don't know why you can do how are you doing this? Who are you? What?
He was something
planet?
Else.
Yeah, he's from another planet.
It was something else. And I remember my first day of class, because we weren't, you know, we were supposed to bring in sketches, maybe. It was like, we did the intro. Then I had that sketch about two guys falling in the ice, one having a life-changing experience and leaves the other one for dead, who helped him pull out. And I just turned to this guy sitting next to me in the back row. And I'm like, you want to read this with me? And I had no idea who this kid is. He's younger than me. And I was the youngest in the class next to him. And then just the way he just... Just the way he worked was crazy. Still is crazy.
Yeah,
I had a conversation with Bobby Moynihan about him.
Yeah,
off air, Bobby stopped by Collider. He said, "You said you know Mikey, and you guys are close." And I said something about a Mikey Day sketch. He's like, "Oh, that's exactly you just gets a crazy idea and it just works out." It was a crazy time, fun time.
Yeah,
you and I slinging the sketch jokes.
God. It was a long time ago now.
I know. It seems like just yesterday.
Yeah.
Where as we start to close here, man, I always like to know, man, where do you go from here? How do you wake up in the morning and still ply this trade and not want to go to Scottsdale or Iowa to sell cars?
I don't know. It's like golf, you know? You hit that one shot, that one beautiful shot that keeps you out on the course.
That's
the
one shot to bring you back.
Yeah, I mean, if I get the auditions, I feel like I have nothing. I don't worry that much about it. You know, I know that I'll get enough. You know, I've always kind of gotten enough to
keep
it going. This year's been okay, you know. If you were in Texas, parts of Texas right now, you'd be like, "Oh, I'm sick of that guy." You know,
some good regional spots coming.
Yeah, I did a thing in Texas where I'm the sun. Speaking of the sun, I'm literally the sun with a guy who plays the moon,
sure.
And then Yeah. Mike Nelson, I don't know if you know that guy.
Mike Nelson from...
He does a ton of commercials as well. And we got to do this gig.
It's not the Mike Nelson from MST when he took over for...
I don't know.
Oh, I don't know.
I don't know. He usually has a stash or a beard.
Oh, no.
Different guy.
Different guy.
Popular name.
Popular name.
Yeah.
But good at his craft.
But yeah, I mean, it's just... I don't have a fallback.
I was gonna say
I don't have any other skills.
Quarter century in. You're in. All bets are in here.
Yeah, unfortunately, it would be really tough to like shift careers at this point.
Yeah.
My kids are still in
school, that's the thing now.
And I don't, you know, I can't, I would hate to like move. Especially in the middle of high school, my daughter.
You can't do that.
No, I got 3 more years there. My son has 7. Yeah. So I feel like I kind of want to
see how this
stick it out for 7 more years, which would put me towards retirement age for SAG. Like, okay. I could claim retirement. So
really?
I don't know. It's like, I just hope it all.
All works out.
All works out. That's all I can.
You're in it.
I got fingers crossed. Knocking on wood.
Well,
you know, whatever it takes. I'm gonna go kill a rabbit and keep its foot.
Keep its foot. That'll work.
Yeah.
Or you know, have more children. Apparently, the biggest lucky charm in the world.
I know, but unfortunately, I had the surgery to make it almost
all impossible. Yeah,
all impossible.
It'd be a Christmas miracle at this point. But you know what? You, a quarter century on here, which is a weird number to say, but that's the truth. You have done a lot and will continue to do. And it was always a pleasure working with you. It's a pleasure to have you back here.
Yeah.
And we'll do it more like real friends off air. Every once in a while, I'm driving, cutting across the valley, and I cross your street. We won't say it, but I there's the spot. I used to turn left to go to Hotry's to work on some scripts or something like that.
There you go.
So we'll have to do that. Tell the folks where they can find you or follow you if you've got a good social media thing going. I know you're on
there. Instagram is just Andrew Hotry.
Yeah.
Also on Twitter, but I don't...
I don't twit much.
Yeah. Only when I feel really inspired to have something entertaining to share.
It's probably better.
Yeah, I don't. I don't. If you want a selective Twitter person, that's me.
That's you.
And it's usually something random and odd and dumb. Really, it's mostly dumb.
I remember your name popped up somewhere. You know, because you're not. And also, like, you responded to something of mine. I'm like, God damn, it's Hotry. Hotry's emerged from the shadows. So follow him at Andrew Hotry on Twitter as well.
Yes.
And H-A-W-T-R-E-Y. I remember it from writing it down on sketch names. Andrew, scripts, I should say. Andrew, thank you very much for coming in, sharing your story. Oh, I hope you had a good time.
Thanks for having me. Absolutely.
Yeah?
Anytime.
Would you do it again? Would you go to, a Sizzler at any point in your life? Would you?
F to the S.
That's the response.
Is that how the kids say it?
F to the yes. They're on Sizzler. Guys, we are about to sign out here. You know the deal. If you are a fan of the Knapsack Files, you know you can follow me at Ken Knapsack. We have a Facebook page, both for Ken Knapsack and the Knapsack Files. Instagram, the same. I'm on Twitch, on YouTube with the motivation videos, and, of course, Patreon, patreon.com/Knapsack Files. If you want to consider supporting like these people who are at my producer and executive producer tiers, we have Jason Humphreys, Pag, Spencer Hunt, Alex Marriott, Kai Thatch, Kyle Gerbrandt, Zach Anderson, Donald Long, The Amazing Web, Erin Parisian, a great author. Check out her stuff. Follow her at Erin_the_author. And Jonas Berggren, a new addition. And then we also have DJ Snacks at Temporal Radio, Sir Thomas Atal, Lethal Logan X, Matthew Simon Bador. She's my Fortnite coach. You might need her help, Andrew. Jacob at Star Wars Legends, Kyle Harlow, Matthew, who is Nos Lack, and Matthew Thompson at TMP Media Productions. Check out all of them. Those are my producer and executive producers from Patreon that literally do make this happen because we get into meetings and talk about the future of the Knapsack Files. So that is it. We'll see you next time here on the Knapsack Files.